coming to you from deep inside the bowels of a great big empty. Get ready for another episode of The Home Defense Show with Skip Coriel.
Well, hello, American families. Welcome to this week's episode of The Home Defense Show. I'm your host, Skip Coriel. And if you love your family, care about them deeply, and want to learn how to protect them in every facet of your life, then you come to the right place. Boy, we got a great show for you today. Folks, you are going to love this. We've got two special guests this week. We have Tom Lambert back, president of Michigan Open Carry. That Michigan Supreme Court decision just came down that we were waiting for. It wasn't everything that we wanted. Maybe it wasn't anything that we wanted. According to the media, if you're a pro-gun person, the sky is falling and it's time to turn in your guns. But Tom Lambert, he will give us the straight scoop on that. That's in coming up in segment two. Then in segment three, we have Terry Johnson. He is a self-defense attorney out of Detroit. This is our new FLP segment, one of our sponsors, Firearms Legal Protection. And Terry and I are going to go over a couple of cases, self-defense shooting. Terry is going to give us his legal analysis, and I'll give you the tactical analysis as well. That's going to be very exciting. And then, of course, in segment four, I'll tell you what I really think. But now, what have I been up to? Oh, gosh, folks, I've been cutting a lot of firewood. I have six pickup truck loads full of firewood already up here. Most of it is in the woodshed already. I've got to build a new woodshed to hold it all. I figure I need 15 pickup truck loads full of wood to get us through a long, hard winter. So that's what I'll do, along with me and my three kids and my wife. I have been working very, very hard on the blind man's rage. If you don't know what that is, let me explain. The blind man's rage is book number four in the God Virus post-apocalyptic adventure series written by yours truly, Skip Coriel. Just go to Amazon.com, do a search on Skip Coriel. It'll pop right up there. The Blind Man's Rage. Oh, this is the culmination of the three previous books. Man, a lot of stuff. I'm 100 pages in to the book now. I've written the first 100 pages. Man, I've already killed a lot of bad guys. It's a much safer way to kill people when you do it while writing fiction. But Uncle Rodney, he is back with a vengeance, and we have new characters as well. We have Justice Reed, a world-renowned astrophysicist, and then we have Sparky Fillmore. Sparky is he's a prophet of God sent to give Uncle Rodney, General Rodney T. Branch, a message from God. And then, of course, we have all the old characters back. Sergeant Donnie Brewster, Marine Corps sniper. We've got Colonel Ranger McPherson. We got Colonel Dan Branch. We got Jackie Branch. We got Jeremy Branch. Dale Masbrook. We've got, we'll have Larry Jackson and probably Danny Briel in there. Jeff Arnett. Maybe a few more. Oh, in this book, The Blind Man's Rage, Sammy Thurmond, the right-hand evil henchman of the blind man. Sammy Thurmond, he turns on the blind man, and we are privy to a conversation between Sammy Thurmond and General Rodney T. Branch. Now that was a real treat. I enjoyed writing that scene. You know what? We've got time. I'm going to go ahead and I'm just going to read you, just one little snippet here. I'll give you a preview. August 4, Coker Creek, Tennessee. If you've never been to Coker Creek, Tennessee, maybe you've been there and you blinked and you went on through it, but it's through the mountains. I used to go there all the time when I was visiting my two children from my first marriage. They lived in northern Georgia, so I'd have to drive down through the Appalachian Mountains to visit them all the time, and I'd go through this little tiny town called Coker Creek. But, hey, I digress. Justice Reed lived a few miles up the mountain in the heart of the Chippewa National Forest near a tiny town called Coker Creek. He lived there by design, to get away from people and all things modern. Tellico Mountain was just to the north and Farner Mountain was to the south. He was at a place near where Georgia, Tennessee, and North Carolina all converged in the southeast corner of the state. The trout fishing was good, and no one bothered him here. Justice planned on dying here on his porch whenever God saw fit to take him. If he became sick, he wouldn't fight the inevitable. He'd just let life take its natural course, and 100 years from now, he imagined some traveler would find his dried-out body still attached to this very porch swing. Right now, Justice Reed's only goal in life was to drink himself into the grave. He took a drink of his dandelion wine and placed a mason jar back on his lap. Then he began to rock slowly back and forth in the shade of his porch swing. No one knew he was up here. He closed his eyes and listened to the birds. It was hot on the mountain, but cool in the shade of his cabin. Justice Reed was 76 years old, and he hadn't ventured down the mountain in over 7 years. He didn't have to. Everything he needed was right here at his homestead. Every night he listened to his solar-powered radio for the news. Well, every night until over a year ago, when everything went silent after the collapse. He knew what had happened, and he was probably the only person on the planet who wasn't adversely affected by it. He grew his own food, had running water, minimal power requirements, and had neither need nor desire for human companionship. The old man looked ancient and frail, not an ounce over 135 pounds soaking wet. The skin on his face appeared to be draped over his skull and then pasted down with Elmer's glue. He looked out at the kudzu vines growing anywhere they could find sunlight and couldn't help but wonder, "Can I make wine out of that?" Justice Reed was a certified genius, a nuclear physicist with advanced degrees in chemical engineering, electrical engineering, aerospace technology, military history, and mechanical engineering. It had always been his goal to be a well-rounded scientist, but to also be practical. That's why he'd diversified his education more than others. Over the years, before his failed lifelong experiment with inebriation, Justin had worked at a lot of different jobs. Chief engineer of a nuclear power plant, advanced weapons designer for the Department of Defense, as well as a short stint as an illegal arms dealer. It was that last one which had caused him most of his grief. In fact, he'd spent several years in a federal prison before being pardoned by the last president in return for a 5-year commitment to help design a miniaturized atomic weapons system. That had been 15 years ago, and he hadn't enjoyed it at all, aside from the challenge of it and the unlimited budget. The problem was this. Justice Reed liked to work alone. And he just didn't work and play well with others, that and his addictive personality. He took another drink of the wine, this time letting it linger at the back of his throat before swallowing. There was a movement to his right, down at floor level, and Justice looked down to see a small mouse scampering across the broken-down porch floor of his house. He didn't like mice. They carried too many diseases, and they pooped all over everything. They bred like rabbits, and if he didn't do anything about it, they'd soon overrun him from his own home. He made a mental note to build a better mousetrap. There was a book beside him, a hardback, and he picked it up and opened it to his bookmark. He read it out loud to himself. 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 2 and 3. As a result, they do not live the rest of their earthly lives for evil human desires, but rather for the will of God. For you have spent enough time in the past doing what pagans choose to do, living in debauchery, lust, drunkenness, orgies, carousing, and detestable idolatry. Justice put the Bible back down on the bench and looked out at the woods all around him, and then he said out loud, "That about sums it up for me." Indeed, he had spent enough time on drunkenness and debauchery. That was true enough, and he didn't deny it. He wondered what would have happened with his life if he'd not given himself over to the bottle, had not dived headlong into immorality for all those years. And now he was old and all used up, and he wondered, was the part in the Bible about grace and forgiveness really true? He understood the law and justice and wrath, but justice did not fully understand Jesus, and most of all, he wondered if it was too late for him to change course. He decided that he regretted his youthful indiscretions and would try to do it different in another life, if it was given to him. Then he thought about verse 2, about doing the will of God, and he wondered, how does anyone know the will of God? Does he tell them in dreams or visions? He just didn't know these things, but had a desire to find out. He made a mental note to himself, "After I finish that mousetrap, I'll find out what is the will of God. He thought about the state of the world, the anarchy, the chaos, the violence, and the mayhem, about what he would cook for dinner tonight. And then it occurred to him that none of these things really mattered, except for the dinner. Justice picked up the mason jar and drank until it consumed him. He fell asleep on the porch swing and slept right on through dinner, unaware that the mouse had gone inside his home and had eaten his fill with impunity. Cool. Well, that gives you a little bit of idea of Justice Reed, one of the new characters in The Blind Man's Rage. I love the blind man. I'm going to kill him, though. I'm sorry. I shouldn't tell you that. You should know that in all of my novels, the good guys win. It is just a given. You know, Rodney T. Branch, people ask me, is he going to die? You know, I think if I killed off General Rodney T. Branch in one of my novels, people would visit my house, and they'd be carrying pitchforks and axes and torches. It would not be pretty. So, I'm thinking I probably won't kill off the general. But the blind man's got to go. He's a bad dude. All right, and hey, for you women, we even got some romance thrown in there. Will Sergeant Donnie Brewster marry Nurse Vanderbogue? She's a real looker, but does Donnie have what it takes to win her over? He's a great sniper, but he's not the smartest tool in the shed when it comes to women. I guess we'll just have to see, won't we? You know, people ask me, when you write your novels, do you write out the outline? Do you plan it out all ahead to the minutest detail? Because I know some people do that, and I have done that before. But for the most part, I don't do that. The first 70 or so pages come really, really hard for me because that's how I get back in touch with the characters. That's how I figure out the plot line. I know that I'm going from point A to point B, but I really don't know how I'm going to get there. And so it's exciting for me because, you know, a lot of people, they'll read an action-adventure novel to find out what happens, right? That's why I write these books. I need to find out what's going to happen. And if you don't write the book, you don't know. And so, you know, I tend to, it's almost zen-like. You know, I'll start writing the book, and it's like, I don't know what's going to happen in chapter 3 until I finish writing chapter 2. And then I got a better idea. Okay, well, now this needs to happen, that needs to happen. And, you know, right now I've got a bow wave of scenes that I have to write, and I just jot them down and say, okay, well, we got to write a scene about this. You know, what about Sammy Thurman? What is he going to do next? You know, is he really telling the truth, or is he a spy sent by the blind man? I don't know these things, but I'm very excited to find out. Well, we don't have time for the news, but you know what? It's bad. The news sucks. There's people marching all over the place. These, Antifa crowds in Portland have just told everyone to bring guns to the next march. I don't know what that means, and they probably don't know how to use those guns anyways. But you know what? It's going to get nasty in Portland, and that's important to me because I have relatives in Portland. My brother-in-law and my sister-in-law live in Portland. But anyways, the news is bad, but hey, maybe it'll be better next week. Now we're going to go ahead and we're going to take a break. Then we're going to be speaking with Tom Lambert, president of Michigan Open Carry. So, and he's going to tell us all about this latest Michigan Supreme Court ruling that was passed down by the Michigan State Supreme Court and how it affects us and what happens next. Are we all going to have to give up our guns? Will we never, ever be able to carry in the pistol-free zones? Let's find out. In 2 minutes. Go ahead and check out firearmslegal.com/MidwestTactical. See what they can do for your family. And then go to elitefirearms.us and see what Larry Jackson can do to help arm your family responsibly. This is Skip Coriel on the Home Defense Show. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
My name is Siege Coriel. Welcome to the Home Defense Show with my dad, Skip Coriel. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back.
This is Skip Coriel from the Home Defense Show, and I want you to have the very best handgun that money can buy. And that's why we recommend you visit Larry Jackson at Elite Firearms and Training. As a concealed carry instructor, I see people every week out on the range with guns they can't shoot properly because they didn't know what to buy. That will never happen at Elite Firearms and Training. Larry Jackson will personally fit you with your very own personal defense pistol. So call Larry Jackson today at 616-299-8715 or visit elitefirearms.us.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. I host Frontlines of Freedom, a weekly syndicated military talk radio show. One of my co-hosts is Skip Coriel, the host of this show. We cover things that impact military and veteran communities, and we do it from the veteran's perspective. The show is broadcast across the nation and is also available as a podcast on our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please join Skip and me weekly on Frontlines of Freedom.
Okay, folks, welcome back to the Home Defense Show. This is your host, Skip Coriel. We are speaking now with Tom Lambert, president of Michigan Open Carry. Tom, welcome to the Home Defense Show.
Hi, Skip.
Tom, it's good to have you back. You are becoming a regular here. I think it's because Michigan Open Carry is just so darn active when it comes to trying to uphold our gun rights here in Michigan. So, hey, hats off to you, and thank you very much for all that you guys do.
Yeah, thanks. We can't stop. Every time we see a fight, we kind of want to jump into it.
Well, you know what? You have a warrior mentality, and there's certainly nothing wrong with that. No one will ever call Michigan Open Carry a bunch of snowflakes, now, will they?
I certainly hope not.
Okay. All right. Now, Tom, we had you on, I don't know, a month and a half ago or so, and we were talking about, you know, the Michigan State Supreme Court case that was going up before them, and they were going to rule by the end of July, and they did. Real quickly, give us the overview for the listeners who didn't catch that episode. What was that Supreme Court case all about?
Yeah, sure. We had worked our way all the way up to the Supreme Court on an issue against schools in Michigan. These are basically K-12 schools. The issue was state law allows for firearms to be lawfully possessed in schools in certain circumstances. The two main ones are concealed pistols for people with an exempt concealed pistol license, you know, the special CPL licenses where you have your exemption. The mm-hmm. other circumstance is openly carried pistols for those with a CPL but without the exemption. State law allows both of those to happen. Well, schools, you know, have certain ideologies that don't necessarily align with us, and what some of them did is they made policies that prohibited what state law allowed. And what that's good is a conflict. When there's a conflict between the state law and then a local law, the state law wins out, and that's how conflict works. So we filed suit against the school. The trial court originally found in our favor. The Court of Appeals, in this completely messed up ruling, overturned the trial court, found in favor of the schools. And then we appealed to the Michigan Supreme Court, who traditionally accepts about 4% of the appeals to them a year. They agreed to hear our case. They heard our case, and now we finally have a ruling.
Okay. All right. Now, when I read the news reports, you know, it's all over. I mean, I've got one right here from CNN. I'm going to read this headline, and then I'll start reading the article. And I want you to stop me when I get to something that you feel is not accurate. Just say the word stop, and then, you know, you can have your 2 cents here. I'll start out with the, here's the title. This is from CNN.com. Michigan school districts may ban guns, state Supreme Court rules.
Stop.
Okay. Why is... we didn't make it very far, Tom. Are you sure about that? I mean, this is in the news. So it's got to be true.
Yeah, and to be fair to CNN, just about everybody reported it that way. You know, there's certain things wrong with CNN, but it was kind of everybody got this one wrong. And it's a little complicated. So to get into what happened, the Supreme Court ruled against us. They ruled against us on a 4-3 vote. Even though the Supreme Court is supposedly 5 conservatives and 2 liberals, they still ruled 4-3 against us. And to get into how they ruled against us, they didn't rule against us completely. And so this is an issue of preemption. Again, where one level of law takes precedent over another, that's a type of preemption. And I don't want to get too technical here, but I have to get some technical details out to a certain degree. There are 3 types of preemption. Express, that's where a law specifically says this party cannot make any other laws. That's express. Every party agreed that the Michigan's preemption law did not apply to schools. That's right. We all said it did not apply to schools because schools were not enumerated as a local unit of government under the law. That's fine, because there's still 2 more types to go. The next type is field preemption, or you could call it implied field preemption, because the first one is expressed, the next 2 are implied. So where it doesn't explicitly say something, it's still implied. Field, again, implied field preemption, that's where the legislature so heavily regulates an area of law that it leaves nothing to the lower level left to regulate, and therefore it occupies the field. What the implications of a school being field preempted are is that a school would not be able to have any regulations on firearms whatsoever. The court said that schools are not expressly preempted, which again we agree with. They also are not field preempted. We disagree with that, but that's really not a big deal because state law controls either way, and it's not a big deal if schools regulate up to state law. The entire point of the lawsuit from the very beginning was challenging policies that went beyond state law. And that third type of preemption is called implied conflict preemption. Because remember we talked about that conflict? We all know state law allows for firearms to be possessed in schools lawfully. Schools are saying, no, they can't. You have that conflict there. That's, while the other ones, there's a lot of technicalities that go into there. Conflict is the easiest one to get. It is the most straightforward. And in my opinion, it was our strongest argument by far. So what did the Court of Appeals find there? Nothing. They avoided the argument completely by absurdly claiming that we didn't make the argument and that also we abandoned the argument. I don't know how you can abandon something you didn't make, but we're not really dealing with honest people here. We made a conflict argument. Mm-hmm. We said, no, the school's policies are doing something state law does not allow. Clio, the school we sued, even acknowledged we were making a conflict argument because right before we went to oral arguments in the Supreme Court, they tried to change their policy to come in line with state law and filed a motion with the court to have our, in their words, conflict argument dismissed. I don't know we didn't make a conflict argument when the other party tried to undo our own argument and have our argument. The only party here that thought we didn't make a conflict argument was the Supreme Court. And again, I believe the reason they said that was because simple and straightforward and obvious it is that a conflict argument would have resulted in a win for us. And so what it means, the whole net of this is the Supreme Court said that schools can go up to state law. They did not address whether or not schools can go beyond state law, and the entire point of the lawsuit was schools going beyond state law. In a dissent written by Justice Wilder and signed by Justice Zara, he basically said it is not a matter of if this gets relitigated, but when. And I agree with him.
Well, okay, well, how does that leave us for, like, right now? I mean, if a concealed a CPL holder open carries in a school, what is going to happen?
Well, that's a great question. So I say that the Supreme Court effectively did nothing here to answer the question. So we're right back to where we were at the beginning. However, schools don't see it that way. If you take the letters from, like, the president of the Michigan Association of School Boards, they think they can go do whatever they want now mm-hmm. because of the way the media put this out and the way they're reading things dishonestly. And my guess is, the members of law enforcement are going to agree with them.
Yeah.
And so while no, nothing happens, and it's all right there, even the majority opinion agreed that conflict preemption means they can go beyond state law, and they were not addressing conflict preemption. Everybody, you know, all the justices signed on to, no, they really didn't answer the question here for us.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I believe this is only a matter of time until this gets litigated again. What we're doing right now is we're working on a motion to reconsider, basically telling them that, look, we did not abandon this argument. It's preposterous, utterly, completely, ridiculously preposterous to completely abandon this argument. You need to kind of come back and look at it. And what it was is there were two lawsuits here, one from another organization, one from us. The cases were not combined, but they ruled on them in a combined manner, and they attributed statements made by the other group and the other group's attorney to all of us when we purposely argued different arguments. Basically, we were going to attack the issue one way, they were going to attack it a different way, because our cases were not combined and the court was going to have to address both of us.
Mm-hmm.
Basically split up and cover the most ground. Well, that's not what the court did in violation of the court rules. And the problem is, the people that decide whether or not they did it right aren't the people that did it. Since the Supreme Court is a self-described court of last resort. Very unlikely that a motion to reconsider be granted, but we're going to give it a try anyways. Failing that being granted, I think you'll see further litigation on the matter.
Well, how soon can we see further litigation? Because basically, I mean, it's only a matter of time before, you know, a open carrier with a CPL walks into a school again. What is Clio going to do when that happens? They'll call the police, and what, the police will come and do their SWAT thing and arrest them, and what happens then?
All of it's enforced under trespassing, so the schools have to tell the party that their actions are not welcome and give them a chance to fix their actions, and then only failing that can that person be trespassed under state law. And that's what I expect them to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have to see what exactly we do. We're not asking anybody, let me be very clear, we're not asking anybody to go out and get trespassed so that we can use them to file suit. Do not do this thinking we will jump it on your case. If we file suit again, we will be very careful how we go about this.
Yeah.
We're not just going to go jump in and defend somebody that may or may not have the casework we're looking for.
Right. Yeah, I know the NRA does that, too. They're looking for a strong case. They're looking for a certain case that will have legal ramifications, that, you know, desirable traits that they want. So anyone going out there, they may not. They may be disappointed, right?
Right, and I also have to say that not everything in the court's opinion was bad for us. There were some good things. Things like there's something called dicta. It's not a finding by the court, but in describing how they apply their logic and reach the finding, they talk a lot, and that's the dicta part. And in the dicta, the justices pretty clearly seem to say that concealed carry for those exempt licensees, that's the schools can't contradict that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so here they're holding a conflict argument up, yet ignoring it elsewhere. So it just shows even more the hypocrisy and the absurdity of the court. And so for those of you who have that special license, here that know that the schools cannot stop you. And with that in mind, we've kind of been holding something in our pocket for a long time here. With, you know, people like to say what we come up with are loopholes. I say you call it whatever the heck you want. If you want to call it a loophole, all you're saying is that my legal interpretation is correct and you don't like it.
Hmm.
And so we have something that we haven't announced yet. We're not going to quite announce it yet, but I think it will blow these exemptions wide open without even a single statutory change. And many, many, many tens of thousands of people will be able to go apply for these exemptions and get them.
Oh, that would be awesome. You know, because basically when you set up all these exemptions for, like, just law enforcement, you've set up a separate special class of people, and we don't have equal protection under the law. At least that's my take on it. Do you agree or disagree?
I think that's hitting the nail right on the head. You're
okay.
Basically saying these people's lives are more valuable than everyone else.
Okay.
And that's wrong to me. And a lot of this is targeting that list of places that only certain people can carry concealed in. And
mm-hmm.
Chip, you and I have talked a lot about that. Look, this is Michigan open carry, but this case more than likely would have had, it would have had positive implications for open carry, but it also would have had very significant positive implications for concealed carry as well, potentially more positive implications for concealed carry than open carry.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, so for right now, we're kind of in a holding pattern, and nothing substantially has changed, has been ruled on. We're just waiting for further litigation, correct?
Yeah. Nothing substantially has changed, but everybody thinks that it has.
Sure.
Unfortunately. Well, and all the media news outlets are either refusing to print my op-ed clarifying the matter, or, as the Detroit News recently did, edited my op-ed before publishing it.
You know, if you just listen to the media and read all the articles, and it's like the sky is falling, and all gun owners should be really just, you know, stressed out right now. Because we lost, and boy, they are just gloating like you would not believe. So I'm glad to hear that it's not over yet and that Michigan Open Carry is going to keep on fighting. I know this costs money. Tom, tell the listeners how they can get involved with Michigan Open Carry, how they can donate to this cause.
Yeah, we have a lot of people that donate to our cause, and we couldn't do what we're doing without them. You can go to miopencarry.org, and there's a donate to our legal fund link there. You can find us on Facebook. We have a Facebook page, a Facebook group. Just search for Michigan Open Carry. There, you can join the organization as a member and support our organization regularly. Again, we would not be able to fight the fights we're fighting if it were not for our generous members and donors.
Absolutely. Okay, well, Tom, when something else breaks in this, when there's more news, please let me know. I'll be watching miopencarry.org myself, because I follow that quite a bit, and I'm a life member. So as soon as something happens, boy, let me know. We'll get you on the show again, and we will let the people know. Tom, thank you very much for being on the Home Defense Show.
No problem, Skip. Thanks for having me again.
Okay, folks, this is Skip Coriel on Home Defense Show. We got a two-minute break. While we are away, check out firearmslegal.com/Midwest Tactical. Find out how you can protect your family against the criminal justice system. Then go to elitefirearms.us. See how Larry Jackson can help you out in choosing a firearm for your family. This is Skip Coriel on Home Defense Show. When we come back, we will have Terry Johnson, attorney from Firearms Legal Protection. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Felix Coriel on the Home Defense Show. Always use guns safely and wisely. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
Hey folks, I want to tell you about my book, Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book. More and more people across the country are seeing the dangers in society and are deciding to carry concealed to protect themselves and their families. My new book lays it out step by step. It'll teach you how to protect and defend the ones you love. Get the benefit of 17 years of teaching experience and a lifetime of training for this important role in society and in your family. You can get Civilian Combat real easy. Just go to Amazon.com, search on Skip Coriel, Civilian Combat, and it'll pop right up there. Don't put it off any longer. Get Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book by yours truly, Skip Coriel.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if life was like the movies and the good guys always won? In today's world, if you're forced to use your firearm to protect yourself, you will need protection. Firearms Legal Protection is here for you. FLP provides you with seasoned, experienced attorneys that handle your criminal and civil matters as a result of you protecting yourself. FirearmsLegal.com provides its members with uncapped attorney's fees, bail bond protection, and coverage in all 50 states. We are not a reimbursement plan. You can access uncapped attorney's fees for as low as $10 a month. Firearms Legal members are provided with educational services, training videos, and access to our vast national attorney network. While you're protecting yourself, let Firearms Legal protect you.
Listen up, folks. This is important. There are plenty of legal protection services out there, but none will protect you as well as Firearms Legal Protection. This is the one I use and the only one I recommend. Visit firearmslegal.com/Midwest Tactical and protect your family now. Okay, folks, welcome back to the Home Defense Show. This is your host, Skip Coriel. We are speaking with defense attorney Terry Johnson. Terry, you're from Detroit. Welcome to the Home Defense Show.
Skip, thank you. Always a pleasure to talk to you and your audience.
Now, Terry, you are with an organization called Firearms Legal Protection. Can you tell us a little bit about what is that all about?
Thank you, Skip. Yes, I'm with Firearms. What Firearms Legal Protection does is protect those who use a weapon in lawful self-defense of themselves or others. And if you notice, I said weapon. It doesn't have to be a firearm. It can be a knife, a machete, a 2x4, as long as it is a legal weapon in the state that you reside in. You will be covered by us. We take care of attorney's fees, bail bond, the whole nine yards. The great thing about us is our attorney's fees are uncapped, and you don't pay a dime towards attorney's fees other than your monthly or annual fee.
All right. Okay, that sounds really, really good. Now, Terry, how long have you been an attorney?
Way too long, Skip. I've been practicing well over 10 years. I've done cases from jaywalking all the way up to homicides. So
wow.
I've done everything from a little citation all the way up to, like I said, the capital things.
So you see the best and worst that humanity has to offer.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Well, now, Terry, one of the things that I hear from my students all the time, I mean, I've taught over 12,000 people how to carry concealed, and one of the things that they are just incredibly concerned with is, what if I go to prison? What if I go to jail? Am I making the right call? And it's to the point of almost paralysis where they're more afraid of the criminal justice system than they are the bad guy who's pointing a gun at them. First off, why do you think that is? Why are people so concerned about that?
Well, Skip, I think it's a fear of the unknown. You know, most people, especially gun owners, like some level of control. You know, we like to control our own self-protections. We like to train and have control over the things that we do. And when you take that control away from people and you give that control over yourself to someone that you don't know, you know, 12 people that are going to be on a jury, you don't know those people and you have no control over that situation. That's what becomes so very fearful to so many people.
Yeah. Well, how many of us have actually, number one, you know, had to shoot somebody in self-defense, and number two, you know, go into the criminal justice system and actually be tried? I mean, that's not something that very many people have ever done before. So, boy, yeah, you're right. Fear of the unknown is a really big issue. And that's why I asked you to come on the show, because I want to talk about some different, you know, self-defense scenarios where people had to use firearms and self-defense. And I want to start out with this one right here. I got this one from personaldefenseworld.com, and this takes place in North Carolina. But for your purposes, I want you to assume that this occurred in Michigan, because the vast majority of my audience, they're in Michigan, and you're an expert on Michigan law. So let's just assume that this same shooting occurred in Michigan. The headline reads, 68-year-old woman shoots intruder 5 times with a .22 pistol. And it says, okay, a 68-year-old woman used a .22 pistol to unload on an intruder on her property in North Carolina last week. We'll say in Michigan last week. The unidentified woman arrived home around 6:40 p.m. when she heard a strange noise coming from the storage building next to her house. The woman walked over to the building, opened the door, and found a man, later identified as 39-year-old James Cupcake, that's made up, standing in the corner. The news release from the Robeson County Sheriff's Office states that the woman said Doherty aggressively lunged at her when she opened the door, prompting her to pull a .22 pistol and shoot Doherty 5 times. Sheriff's deputies arrived on the scene. The man was taken to a hospital shortly thereafter. His injuries were described as non-life-threatening. It doesn't appear that the woman suffered any injuries during the incident. sheriff wouldn't say if the woman or Doherty would face charges for the incident. It is in the early stages of the investigation. So, that's what we know. In your opinion, should this woman go to jail? Why or why not?
I don't think she should go to jail. There are a couple of facts that you have to, number one, take a look at. She was in her home. She appears that she was in fear, imminent fear for her life, or potentially great bodily harm. Appears that this was a man, so you can also potentially say she could be in fear of criminal sexual assault. So under Michigan statute, I don't believe she would go to jail. I don't even believe that the prosecutor, if you've got a good prosecutor, would look upon this other than anything to say that this was purely self-defense on her part.
Does it matter? You know, and I hear this term kicked around by lawyers all the time. Does it matter that she wasn't in the curtilage of her home? Because this was an outbuilding, like a tool shed or something. So she left the house. She went out to the tool shed. Does that factor in this particular case?
It absolutely does not. Again, under Michigan law, it's still her property. So whether it's an outhouse, a back house, old house, a new house, it's still on her property. And again, in Michigan, I would say she would be completely justified based upon the article that I'm reading and knowing no other facts. Now, if she was next door at a neighbor's house, there would be one or two other hurdles that she'd have to jump, which is, one, was she committing a crime? And it doesn't sound like she was. And the second one would be, was she in a place that she had a legal right to be? And it sounded like she did, again, assuming she was elsewhere. So under Michigan law, I think all of her bases are covered. And this James Cupcake guy just took a lead test, basically, and sounds like he failed.
If the guy's name is Cupcake, I think he should go to prison just for that. I mean, who's named Cupcake anyways? So basically, she had the right to defend herself because he lunged towards her. The fact that she was 68 years old, does that, and he was what, 39, does that factor in?
Absolutely. The way the statute is written, it says honest and reasonable belief. And the honest and reasonable belief, again, if you're at home and even you're on your property and someone that's almost half your age lunges at you, you've got a male lunging at a woman, would you be in imminent fear that they're trying to kill you, do great bodily harm to you, or commit criminal sexual conduct? Absolutely. There isn't necessarily a part of the statute that talks about differentiating between force and other things, but those are things that absolutely play into it from the standpoint of if you were to place yourself in the shoes of this 68-year-old woman, what would a reasonable 68-year-old woman do at that time? And I believe she acted reasonably by protecting herself in this manner she used a 22.
So in general, society or the law gives the weakest members of our society, they are more readily availed the use of deadly force in general. Does that sound true?
I wouldn't term it that way. I would say it's an equalizer. And follow me with this one, Skip. If she was, let's say the attacker was 68 years old, a 68-year-old woman, who tried to attack a 39-year-old man, she'd still be the weaker of the two. But the question you'd have to ask yourself at that point, do you believe a 39-year-old male would be in imminent fear of death, great bodily harm, or criminal sexual assault from a 68-year-old woman? So I'd be very careful how that's worded. It all depends on the circumstances, and using a firearm is just more of an equalizer, not necessarily the opportunity to say, hey, I'm the weaker one here. Look what I get to use.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's where a lot of CPL holders, they get wrapped around the axle because they want it to be black and white and cut and dried, but, you know, it's just not always that way. Sometimes you gotta think about it. But here's one thing that I didn't tell you, Terry. At the end of the article, they give a caveat here. Even so, it appears Doherty, that's the guy who got shot, has an extensive criminal background. Last year, he was hit with two charges of felony possession of burglary tools and misdemeanor possession of drug paraphernalia. The tools included two crowbars. Doherty was also found with two crack pipes, a knife, a razor blade, and a straw.
A straw, huh?
Yeah, he had a straw. Now, I'm not from Detroit. I'm not from the big city. What significance does the straw have to all of this?
Well, maybe he wanted to shoot a spitball at her. I'm not sure, but that one's a new one on me.
Okay. So the fact that he's has a criminal history, is that going to factor in? Does the county prosecutor factor that in at all, or does it not?
Honestly, it doesn't, because, again, you got to realize, once, in this case, the 68-year-old lady used lethal force against this person, his background is irrelevant. There is nothing that said she knew him. This guy's broken into her house several times before, anything along those lines. The burden would be on the prosecutor at that point to show that the 68-year-old woman was not in imminent fear, anything along those lines.
All right, that sounds good. Okay, let's move on to the next one. I want to do one more here, and this one is going to hit you a little closer to home. The title, this is from Fox2Detroit.com. It says, Dearborn Heights road rage shooting results in no felony and no jail time. Chris Etham and a friend were shot at near the intersection of West Warren and Ann Arbor Trail in Dearborn Heights 1 year ago. The armed driver was a woman, and fortunately she missed. This is a quote. He pulled right out in front of Mark, and he slammed on the brakes. They did a little back-and-forth thing, and she pulled out a gun, Etham said. He thought she flipped him off because he was watching the road. I said, no, that's a gun. Chris says he got out of the truck. They began arguing, and the other driver, Bridget Edwards, fired her gun. She was later caught by Dearborn Heights police with two guns in her car and a spent shell casing in her back seat. Officers also pulled surveillance video from the gas station. Initially, the Wayne County prosecutor charged Edwards with 10 felonies, including felony firearm to discharge from a vehicle to felony assault. On Monday, that all changed. Quote, she got off on one misdemeanor, Etham said, so she can still have a gun and she can still shoot at people. I am just dumbfounded. Now, what exactly happened? I mean, procedurally, he went ahead and, you know, he charged her with 10 felonies, and then what, he just dropped all the charges? Is that what you're reading here, Terry?
Well, and I'm not going to say that's not common. Sometimes what happens is the police will do an investigation and they will send back to the prosecutor, who's the charging authority in the state. This is our recommendation. We recommend that you do A, B, C, D, E, and F. Based upon the investigation and the document that gets up to the prosecutor, that's called a request for warrant, the prosecutor then will review that. They'll look at whatever tapes, whatever evidence is there, and they'll do one of three things. The first thing, they may say, there's not enough here to charge, and completely dismiss it. The second thing they could do is charge on each and every count, or they can go back. The third thing is go back to the police and say, hey, we need a little more information on one of the counts. Can you get that for us? They'll resubmit that, and then the prosecutor makes a decision. In this particular case, sounded like the prosecutor went forth with 10 felony charges, and based upon some other things that are unknown to me, the prosecutor and the defense attorney agreed upon some type of deal that allowed this woman, A, to have a misdemeanor. Now, because she has a misdemeanor, I can tell you for a fact, she's going to be on probation for probably a minimum of 2 years. So she's absolutely positively not going to be able to have a gun while she's on probation. Secondly, I don't know what type of misdemeanor she ended up with, but that could be one that can bar her from carrying a firearm for a minimum of 3 years, maybe a maximum of 8 years. Mm-hmm. So she still has an opportunity after that time passes to get herself back together. Most of the things that you see in real life, people believe that just because you're charged with something, that's it. You go to court and there's no way of getting around it. A lot of times decisions are basically made on pleas and plea negotiations.
Let
me give you a statistic here that I think your audience will absolutely be shocked by. Think about this. In Michigan last year, in 2017, the whole state, there were 57,008 total felony cases in the state of Michigan. Skip, question for you. Do you have any idea how many, outside of Wayne County, how many of those cases went to trial either by jury or bench? Just give me a percentage.
60%.
You are awfully high. I'll give you two more guesses. You're way high.
Okay. 40%.
You are still high. One more guess.
Wow. All right. Oh, 18.
Nope. But if you move the decimal, you'd be right on. Outside of Wayne County, the percentage in the state that went to bench or jury trial was 1.8%.
Wow. That's amazing.
So that tells you, correct, Wayne County, a little different. Wayne County had a total of 12,703 felony cases in 2017, and 6.4%, again, 6.4% went to trial either by judge or jury. Mm-hmm. So the point of this is, going back to what you asked me initially, a lot of cases never get that far, because people think it's in their best interest to take a plea. They look at the facts and circumstances, and they figure out what's in their best interest, and away you go.
Yeah. Well, in this case here, I mean, she was charged with 10 felonies. If she had just said, okay, fine, I plead guilty, it would have been all over, right?
Could have been, but again, sometimes in the judicial process, you make deals to cut things down so that that doesn't. For example, can you imagine 57,000 felony cases actually going to trial? The system would shut down.
Yeah. Yeah, it would. So most things are plea bargained. When should someone plead guilty and when should they hold out?
And a lot of it just depends on the facts and circumstances, you know. If you're 60 years old and you're looking at a 25-year sentence, for you, either way, that could be something you may say, either way, I got to go forth, because even if I plea this down, I can't go to prison at that age. Yeah. If you're 20 years old and you're looking at a 20-year sentence, you come out, you're 40 years old, you've got an opportunity for life and some other things. Some of the other things actually gets into social behavior. For example, is it socially acceptable to shoot a gun out of a car? Absolutely not. It all depends on facts and circumstances, and I know you hear this a lot, but every case is different.
And you know what? That's why you need a licensed veteran attorney who has successfully handled capital cases like this, right?
Correct.
You know, we're out of time for the segment, Terry, but what I would like you to do is, you know, I am 100% on board with Firearms Legal Protection, FLP. That's what I carry. That's what I recommend. But how can people get hooked up and find out more about Firearms Legal Protection?
I highly advise you to go to the website, firearmslegal.com/Midwest Tactical. If you go there, there's some great deals for you, as low as $9.95 a month. Get you uncapped attorney's fees in Michigan, criminally and civilly. Again, you don't have to pay up front. We take care of all of that. And we've got other plans on there that allow you bail bond protection, the whole nine yards. But I say this, and Skip, you've heard me say it in your classes as well. If you don't go with us, go with someone, because it's better to have and not need than need and not have.
Terry, I want to thank you very much for being on the Home Defense Show and telling us all about your professional legal opinion. We'll have you on again, okay?
Skip, thank you, and to you and your audience, please stay safe.
Okay, folks, this is Skip Coriel on Home Defense Show. We got a two-minute break here. While we are away, go ahead and check out firearmslegal.com/Midwest Tactical. When we come back, I am going to be talking about road rage, because we just talked about this, and Terry gave you the legal opinion. Now I'm going to talk about tactical things. What should this lady have done? We're going to handle that in 2 minutes.
This is Skip Coriel on Home Defense Show. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Welcome to my dad's Home Defense Radio Show. You're gonna love it.
Hey folks, I want to tell you about my book, Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book. More and more people across the country are seeing the dangers in society and are deciding to carry concealed to protect themselves and their families. My new book lays it out step by step. It'll teach you how to protect and defend the ones you love. Get the benefit of 17 years of teaching experience and a lifetime of training for this important role in society and in your family. You can get Civilian Combat real easy. Just go to Amazon.com, search on Skip Coriel, Civilian Combat, and it'll pop right up there. Don't put it off any longer. Get Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book by yours truly, Skip Coriel.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. I host Frontlines of Freedom, a weekly syndicated military talk radio show. One of my co-hosts is Skip Coriel, the host of this show. We cover things that impact military and veteran communities, and we do it from the veteran's perspective. The show is broadcast across the nation and is also available as a podcast on our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please join Skip and me weekly on Frontlines of Freedom.
This is Skip Coriel from the Home Defense Show, and I want you to have the very best handgun that money can buy. And that's why we recommend you visit Larry Jackson at Elite Firearms and Training. As a concealed carry instructor, I see people every week out on the range with guns they can't shoot properly because they didn't know what to buy. That will never happen at Elite Firearms and Training. Larry Jackson will personally fit you with your very own personal defense pistol. So call Larry Jackson today at 616-299-8715 or visit elitefirearms.us.
Skip, it's time for the Armed America Report. What do you have?
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, a New Mexico burglary suspect will have plenty of time to sit and think about his actions, but it might not be very comfortable. After the bad guy broke into what was then an unoccupied house, someone came home. The resident noticed things were amiss and drew his gun before going inside, where he caught the thief in the act. The intruder pulled out a box cutter and lunged at the armed citizen, who fired once, hitting the stranger in the backside. Charges are pending.
Thanks, Colonel. Colonel, my first reaction to this report was, how is he going to sit and think about it when he has a bullet hole in his buttocks?
Well, but it says he'd be uncomfortable doing it.
That's right. That may not be very comfortable for him. Okay, Colonel, so I did some more research on this, and here's what I found. The home invader was a 47-year-old homeless man named Michael Dunn. He definitely broke into the home and was in the process of several crimes. The man who shot him was sent to the unoccupied house to check on something for the owner. He saw something amiss and armed himself before going inside. Here are some of my observations. 1. If he suspected a burglary and that the criminal may still have been inside, why didn't he just back away and call 911? I think that would have been the safest thing to do, and then he never would have been forced to shoot the criminal. Shooting another person is a life-altering event, even if you survive and are later not charged with a crime, as was the case here. 2. The armed citizen discovered the home invader and then pursued him through the house, eventually cornering him. The criminal then put his hands in the air to surrender, but later had second thoughts and tried to escape. 3. The armed citizen thought he had things under control, but control is many times just an illusion. The criminal then lunged toward his captor, brandishing a box cutter. The shooter hit the homeless man on the head with his pistol and then tried to fire a warning shot to get him to back off. The criminal moved unexpectedly as the warning shot discharged and was accidentally hit in the tuchus.
Oops.
It's entertaining and educational. I think there are some good lessons to learn here. If you don't have to put yourself in harm's way, then by all means, just back off and call the police. It would have been different if innocent people needed protecting, but the bad guy in this case was trying to get away. When a felon flees, just let him go. That's the wisest and safest choice. I think the outcome here was positive as well as entertaining.
We have a bad guy in jail. He didn't die, and I think the armed citizen is probably all the wiser for what happened. At any rate, justice was served, and at least in this case, Lady Justice was poetic.
I love it.
Okay, folks, welcome back to the Home Defense Show. This is your host, Skip Coriel. Boy, this has been a really, really good show. Tom Lamberts gave us all the update on that Michigan Supreme Court case. That was good stuff. And then Terry Johnson from Firearms Legal Protection gave us some good legal advice on two separate cases. One of those was about road rage. And I hear a lot about that. I hear a lot of dumb, stupid things that happen out on the road. When you're driving a 5,000-pound bullet, that's the time when you should be smart, not stupid. Now is the time in the show where I tell you what I really think. Okay, folks, now I want to talk about road rage. Road rage is a topic I hear about a lot these days. It seems like our whole society is on the edge. We've got things called the knockout game, where young kids punch and seriously injure or even kill another human being simply for the thrill of it. That's sick. Very sick. And we also have people on the far left attacking people on the far right simply for wearing a pro-Trump hat or a t-shirt. Folks, this is crazy behavior, but it appears to be the new normal and a sign of the times. I would put road rage right up there with crazy behavior like this. In my opinion, road rage should be extremely rare, and here's why. In most cases, it takes two to tango. Or in the case of road rage, it takes two to tangle. I've had probably a dozen situations in my lifetime where I had the opportunity to engage another driver, but I chose not to. In several cases, the other driver chose to follow me, to taunt me, and even try to stop my forward progress. But still, I chose not to engage them. I simply drove away, leaving them there to stew in their own anger. From a tactical standpoint, the worst thing you can do is respond to these people. Rational people don't follow you in their car, get in front of you, slam on their brakes, flip you off, or open their windows and scream obscenities while driving dangerously. So here are some tactical rules to follow when other drivers try to goad you into a fight. Number one, do not engage them. Only look at them long enough to make sure they're not pointing a gun at you. Do not yell back. Do not return their one-fingered and vulgar salute. Do not escalate. Always attempt to de-escalate. Number two, do not take their actions personally. It can't be personal because they don't even know you. They're total strangers, and quite frankly, they probably act like this all the time. Their rudeness and violence is not a statement about you. It is a statement about them. Number three, do not allow your ego to suck you into a fight. I've heard so many people say things like, "Hey, you can't do that to me." Well, in reality, that statement isn't true at all. Yes, they can do that to you. It's history. It's over. It's done. They did it. And you now have to decide how you're going to respond. Your children and your spouse are worth fighting and dying for. However, your ego is not. Number four, do not show them your gun. This is a crime, and you'll go to prison for it. The only time you can legally brandish your gun is when you are also legally justified in using deadly force in self-defense. Keep your gun out of the mix. Do not escalate the altercation. Number five, memorize the license plate number and call 911. If you have a passenger with a cell phone, then have them snap a picture or even videotape the other driver's road rage. This will go a long way in convicting them and also in exonerating yourself. The bottom line is this. You should always try to disengage, get to safety, call the police. Nothing good can come from stopping and getting into an argument with an irrational driver. Allowing someone to verbally abuse you or challenge you may not seem manly, but it is the best course of action and one that you can truly live with. And that, folks, is what I really think. Okay, you know, we are about out of time. The show just really flew here, but it was a good show. Next week on the Home Defense Show, we are going to have an executive from Hornady Incorporated. They are the ones who make my favorite gun safe called the Rapid Safe. I own three of those. Oh, they are fantastic. They allow me to get that loaded gun cock-lock ready to rock within a second and a half of recognizing that I need it. They operate on ARFID technology, and we'll explain all of that next week. If you have any questions for me, you can go to skipcoriel@hotmail.com and just let me know what you like and what you don't like. Don't forget to check out our sponsors, firearmslegal.com/MidwestTactical and Larry Jackson at elitefirearms.us. Well, okay, folks, that about wraps it up for this week's episode of the Home Defense Show. Until next week, remember, your purpose in life is to find something greater than yourself and serve it. Always remember, God, family, country, in that order. It's important how you live, but it's equally important how you die. Your family and the ones you love need your protection, so train, always train, stay alert, stay alive. Until next week on the Home Defense Show, this is your host, Skip Coriel. God bless you, God bless your family, and God bless America.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Home Defense Show. Now, get out there and protect the ones you love. We'll see you next week with more of the best in home defense.
Bye-bye, boys!
Have fun storming the castle!